Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today, we're going to talk, well, I'm not even going to really talk very much. We're going to have a guest, and well, not even a guest, because he is the newest member of the MCRIT team, Philippe Rolla, an intensive care doctor in Montreal with a particular interest in point-of-care ultrasound for critical care. And what Philippe's going to bring to the table is inpatient critical care, ultrasound, and a real interest, passion, and area of expertise in the concepts of venous congestion, their deleterious effects on our end organs, and the ultrasound signs of that venous congestion. And that's pretty much what you're going to hear about today. Now, before we get into it, every few years or so, and it's, I think it's been at least 2 or 3 years before I've mentioned, I have to do the public radio type campaign to ask you to support the show. And the reason you haven't heard about it for 2 years or so is like, I'm not trying to make a profit here. I just need to make the server and other expenses that come with running the website and the podcast. And so every so often I have to make a plea. And that plea is for you to please, if you are not a trainee, if you are making an attending or consultant salary, or you are already established in a nursing or career, you know, where you're outside of having to make student loans, please consider joining MCRIT CME at cme.mcrit.org, even if you don't need the CME. The CME is just an excuse, so it's very legitimate to write it off on your taxes or get your department to reimburse you, and there is an insane amount of CME, probably too much CME for anyone's needs, but it's all there. I mean, way back into the MCRIT catalog, there's CME, and but like I say, it's not about the CME certificate, it's about supporting the show, because that CME is the only thing that keeps the lights on, keeps us running, allows new members of the team like Philippe Rolla to be wrapped into a website that is up and running. So if you want to support the MCRIT CME site, like what is in it for you besides the warm-hearted feeling you get from knowing that you make this possible, and without you, there would be no more MCRIT or MCRIT team or all the other, you know, affiliated independent blogs that make up the MCRIT consortium right now. Well, you know, folks have asked, where do we get the recording of the MCRIT conference? Well, the way you get the recording of the MCRIT conference is you sign up for the MCRIT CME, because it's there. That's where the entire MCRIT conference 2019 is housed. And so if you want to see that, then, you know, I could have just probably sold that as a standalone for more money than the price of a year of MCRIT CME. But again, this is not a profit motive. This is just keeping the lights on. So it's there. If you sign up for cme.mcrit.org, then in addition to supporting the show, you get the MCRIT recording video there. Watch it. Enjoy it. And one of the guests there is Philippe Rolla, who you're going to hear from today. And he runs the Thinking Critical Care blog at thinkingcriticalcare.com. That's one word, thinkingcriticalcare.com. And we were thinking, should we just roll that blog into MCRIT? And the decision we came to is no. Let's leave Thinking CC up in its independent form. Philippe will continue to post there. And his posts are amazing. There's a lot of audio posts as well as standard blog posts. And the audio, it's audio verite is how I think I could describe it. Sound quality is a very much of the environment that is recorded in. There is not complex audio mastering. There's not a lot of editing. What you're hearing is usually 2 or 3 really smart people just talking about critical care and point of care ultrasound and all sorts of stuff. And it is fantastic in its own right. It's a little bit disparate from the standard MCRIT fare. But what we're going to do is Philippe, anytime he wants to post something that is very much the MCRIT type of post, or more likely, I'll get on every couple months and Philippe and I will shoot the crap about his most recent posts, and then we will summarize them. And if you want to hear the original, we'll obviously link to them all, and we'll put up anything good on both sites. We'll dual link it. But you'll be seeing more and more Philippe on the MCRIT site, and then it will consistently refer back to the continuing to exist thinkingcriticalcare.com site. And if you want to see Philippe in person, I'll tell you how to at the end of the podcast. But what we're going to talk about today is the venous side, the oft-neglected, oft-ignored venous side. And we're specifically going to talk about a concept of renal compartment syndrome. And, you know, for ages, I was taught when I was a critical care trainee, well, you got to preserve the map to preserve the kidneys. But it turns out, just like every other compartment syndrome, It's not the MAP. It's not the diastolic blood pressure. It is the perfusion pressure, meaning it is both the arterial pressure supplying the kidney, and that is, you have to subtract the venous backflow against the kidney. And it is the two together that make up perfusion pressure, and that determines whether your kidneys live or die. And so, you know, the concept of giving fluids may, if the patient's volume responsive, increase cardiac output, but at the same time, it's going to increase the venous back pressure. And the net, depending on the patient's hemodynamic milieu, may be to make things worse. And I think it often does make things worse. And that is really the subject of today's podcast. This is just one road to get to a place that I think, if you listen long enough to MCRIT, you're going to get to, but there's many different patient scenarios you could get to the same place. The one we're going to go into now is maybe the most cleanly evidenced one, which is management of CHF patients. And it's just going to be Philippe telling a story of one patient that caused him to really radically shift where he's devoting his time. He's actually started a end-stage CHF clinic because the care that he can provide may be very different than the care that many of his colleagues are providing. I think that's enough inroad to get to what you need to know to listen and enjoy this podcast. And I'll talk to you a little bit more at the end.
So today I'm going to speak a little bit about a case that actually became the index case for the startup of our advanced CHF clinic. And I think it's a really interesting case and really displays a lot of the usefulness that some of the markers of echographic venous congestion can do clinically for you. So our fellow is a 70-odd-year-old man who was first came to my attention about almost a year ago when I was consulted to do a palliative ascites drainage on a patient with severe cardiomyopathy and cirrhosis with end-stage cardiorenal syndrome. So when I saw this guy up on the wards, he was actually sitting on the edge of his bed with some nasal prongs, and he was a bit short of breath. But, you know, if you had to look at him globally, he didn't look that bad. So right away, to me, this struck a little chord, and I put some doubt into the veracity of the cardiorenal syndrome in the sense that is commonly understood. So indeed, when I looked at this guy's chart, he'd come in with a creatinine in around 200s, and he was, you know, short of breath and anasarca, and so they bumped up his Lasix a little bit, and you know, it didn't have much impact. His creatinine kept rising, and he was essentially labeled an end-stage cardiorenal, and for various reasons, he was not being offered dialysis, and he was essentially being palliated, and at this point they had given him some albumin, given him some fluids, stopped the Lasix, and it was kind of deemed that his kidneys were in such a low flow state that was essentially a wrap for this guy. But if we could take off some ascites, at least relieve some shortness of breath, etc. So as I'm chatting with him, I put the probe on him and start looking. So this guy had a huge IVC in the, you know, near 3.5 to 4 centimeter range, big hepatic veins, a 100% pulsatile portal veins, essentially an interrupted flow, and might even have a little bit of retrograde portal vein flow.
Hey folks, I'm going to chime in here. There are some folks who are not on the cutting edge of intensive care ultrasound who will have no idea what we're talking about when we discuss portal vein flow. Now, I was going to explain it, but luckily at the conference, I had Philippe up on stage and he did a fantastic basic explanation. And then we'll link in the show notes for where you can get a more complex explanation and a description of how to do it. But I think this will describe it. And again, if you want this whole video, then you just go and sign up for MCRIT CME.
Having the patient who's no longer volume responsive is entirely a pathological state. It doesn't happen in any normal situation that you're
responsive. Let me pause to make sure they're on the same page. So in many places, they're taking a patient until their cardiac output just would not rise with any more fluid. And it could also be evidenced by, you look at the IVC and there's just no variability whatsoever. It's just a solid pipe, right? Yep. And you think that's bad.
Yeah, I've come to believe that's bad, and I think we've got a fair bit of scattered evidence to show that too much fluid is bad. Now, there are some markers that have been shown to be associated with badness in general a lot in the CHF literature, and fortunately, André Deneau has been working on this quite a bit.
Canadian intensivist with a specialty in ultrasound.
In his post-op hearts, and has seen lots of association with organ injury and multi-system failure with signs such as associated with that big fixed unmoving IVC with portal vein pulsatility.
What does this mean?
So normally your portal vein flow is a monophasic uniform flow like most venous flows.
So it's just kind of...
Exactly. And as your venous system fills and pressures rise and pressures transmitted over from essentially your right atrial pressure all the way through your hepatic sinusoids into your portal vein, then you start seeing these pressure waves. And when you start seeing a pulsatility that's more than 50% or so, then that's become quite associated with a lot of bad outcomes.
Okay, so you're actually throwing the probe on, finding liver, finding a big vessel. How do you differentiate the hepatic artery and the portal vein?
Well, that's reasonably easily just with the color Doppler.
Okay.
It's just going to show up as flow towards the probe.
And then you're putting a little Doppler window over that vessel.
Yep.
And then you're just seeing, is it just, you know, venous flow, or does it look like an artery?
Yeah, it starts to look like an artery. And then when it gets really bad, then it actually becomes biphasic with some retro flow.
And if it looks like an artery, you're saying you've gone too far on the fluids, that there's congestion and these organs are not happy.
And it's time to pull some back. Yep.
Are you?
So there you go. Let's get back to the original podcast.
And he had a huge amount of ascites. So I recommended that we bump up his diuretic. And I did put in a pigtail and said to drain it all out. And then when I came back to see him the next day, he'd not gotten any Lasix that had been countermanded by nephrology consultants. He was still getting, I think, normal saline at like 50 cc's an hour. And they had clamped treating physician had clamped the ascites drain after 2 liters because his BP was apparently borderline in 90s or so. So in order to not put the treating physician in a bit of a political hot seat between my approach and the consulting team's approach, I kidnapped the patient to the ICU, given the rising creatinine and the slightly elevated potassium. His creatinine was up into the 300s by metric units. And so I took him down to the ICU and opened up that abdominal ascites drain wide open, let it drain all that it could, and diuresed the daylights out of him. And it was really nice physiologically. We could see his pulsatility of his portal vein diminish until it was like under 20%. And we took out 12 liters, I think, in his belly. And when I sent him home, his creatinine was 110, essentially normal. And he had a fairly flat belly. He still had peripheral anasarca. He still had lots of tissue edema. And then I proceeded to follow him as an outpatient, as the index patient for our advanced CHF clinic. And it was very interesting. Over the course of the next months, his creatinine would vary. And sometimes it would slowly creep up, and I would bring him in and put the probe on him. And he was, you know, his IVC was maybe down in his case to like 2.5-3 centimeters with clear variation, and his portal vein was smooth and he was a little dry. And then I'd have to back off, tell him to hold his Lasix for a couple of days and see. Other times his creatinine would rise a little bit, and then he was congested again with a pulsatile portal vein. And it's not been that easy to get him on a really steady dose of Lasix. But to put it in his perspective, we actually kept this guy out of the hospital and without drains for about 5 months. And then he did have to come back when he was short of breath. And unfortunately, I couldn't see him in the clinic. He came up and emerged and got admitted. And I'll speak about that in a few minutes. But essentially, we could really simply manage, and with no cognitive, you know, fatigue, figure out what was going on with him and either drop his Lasix or increase his Lasix and keep him, you know, nice and steady. And prior to this, in the year prior, he was getting his belly drained every couple of weeks at another hospital. So just with appropriate fluid management, we kept him out of the hospital and out of interventional drains for like 4 months. Now, when he came about on his last admission, when unfortunately I couldn't see him as an outpatient, he was brought in and his creatinine was about 150. And he had a big belly full of ascites, and they drained that and they gave him a number of doses of albumin. Now, if you've been following at all the glycocalyx issues and Thomas Woodcock's great explanations and reviews on how albumin works, and I think that, you know, obviously people meant well. It's kind of a reflex thing to do this, drain ascites, give albumin, but really that only applies to those cirrhotic patients who tend to have a very low intravascular volume. And, you know, in order to take that big fluid shift, you might want to give them a little something that's going to leak a little less. But that whole concept of actually using albumin to get that third space back in does not work if you're dealing with high central venous pressures, because actually this whole, you know, reabsorption at the distal capillary has essentially been shown to not really clinically happen, so that all you're getting from an albumin is possibly a little bit less leak, and therefore the ability to maintain some intravascular volume in the face of a leaky cirrhotic liver, possibly. So he got this basically on already a fairly congested system, and this just topped his kidneys over, and his creatinine started to rise again. So went back to see him, put the probe on him. Again, very pulsatile. His creatinine is now in the high 200s. And I'm now starting the process again to drain him out, diurese him out, and anticipate sending him home in the next few days. What really became clear to me in this following him as an outpatient was that once the major fluid is off, that major anasarca is gone, he can get congested relatively quickly intravascularly and start to affect his kidneys. And it's really hard to tell from a traditional physical exam standpoint. Sure, you can get an idea of the JVP and look at the jugulars. And in his case, they're reasonable, so-so. But in his case, they're always going to be on the high-ish side. So sometimes you can't differentiate the high-ish CVP, but that doesn't injure the organs so much, or that doesn't interfere with organ function so much compared to the ones that it is. Because his CVP likely runs at his best state in the high or the mid-teens or something like that, which is going to give him a high jugular venous wave pulse. On the other hand, we can set our renal function clock by the pulsatility of his portal vein. And so far it's really panned out. And the reason he really became an index patient in this case is because he was a smart fellow. He saw what we were doing and he asked, well, who's going to follow this as an outpatient? And we said, well, we don't know, because to the best of our knowledge, no one does this. So he became the first patient, and now the clinic is slowly growing. But I think it's a really good case, and a number of well-meaning and intelligent physicians have approached this case. And unfortunately, it is guesswork, and that's essentially the best that you can do. His urine electrolytes are essentially always low. And that's not because he is pre-renal in the sense of needing more fluid. He may become pre-renal in a sense of having a decreased renal perfusion pressure when he gets congested, but that's because of elevated venous pressures, mostly and only partly due to a decreased cardiac output, which it's not like we can fix that one anyways. The only one we can impact is the downstream venous pressure. So I hope this illustrates a little bit of the clinical usefulness of assessing venous hypertension. And there'll be more case discussions on this coming soon.
Well, there you go. So Philippe Rolla, you'll be hearing a lot more from him. The concept of venous congestion and point-of-care ultrasound for evaluating it, you'll be hearing a lot more about that from him and me and Farkas and Rory and all the others. We're all in the same mind of this. And if you want to actually see Philippe Rolla in person, then you go to Montreal, May 22nd to 24th, 2019, for the Hospitalist and the Resuscitationist Conference. And more information will be in the show notes for this episode. I think Farkas has confirmed he's going, and Rory will be there, and I don't know if I'm showing up. I said no, but it just looks too good. Maybe I'll have to pop in, but you can check out the link there for all of the information. All right, Scott Weingart from the MCRIT podcast saying bye-bye.